content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article, or a couple of articles from AARP, the magazine. Let's start with Upfront, What I Know Now, and this is by Donna Cowron. The fashion designer riffs on Streisand, Haiti, and memory. Becoming DK. My father was a custom tailor. My mother worked as a model on 7th Avenue in New York. When I was a child, they would bring me there from our home out in Queens, and I said the one thing I never wanted to do was to be a designer. And then there was Anne Klein. I went in to see Anne Klein to apply for a college summer internship, and Anne asked me to walk for her because she thought I was a model. When I showed her my portfolio, she said, "You're hired." Then Anne told me I should quit school because I was already a designer. So I did. Flying solo. I came up with the idea for 7 easy pieces at Anne Klein. A bodysuit, a wrap and tie skirt, a jacket, a coat, leather and suede, knitwear, and even an evening piece. Dressing Babs. I was told that Barbara Streisand needed some clothes. I emptied my closets and brought everything to show her. I walk in, and she's sitting there. I said, "I'm sorry, but I've just got to sit down. You have no idea. You are my dream." And Barbara just looks at me and says, "Do you have any clothes to go with these fur coats?" Now she's my sister for life. Creating DKNY. My daughter Gabby started taking all my clothes, wearing them to school. Long velvet dresses with boots in high school. That wasn't cool. So I said, "I gotta make a younger person's collection." And DKNY was born. Supporting Haiti. After the earthquake hit Haiti in 2010, I realized many of my causes overlapped with Haiti's needs. The preservation of its culture, the need for better health care. So I brought down integrative therapists from the current brand Urban Zen. Over the years, I partnered with Haitian artists or artisans who made accessories for Urban Zen, with the money from any sales going straight back to them. Redefining the cold shoulder. It's a top or dress with the shoulder cut out. The shoulder is the only place you ever gain weight. Or that you never gain weight. Forget the rest of your arm. Hillary Clinton wore it when she was first lady, but it looks good on everybody. Memory loss. In a sense, I have always had this problem because most artists think from a different side of their brain, which is why I am so weak in learning computer technology. But memory loss still concerns me a lot. As we sit here today, there's so much that I can't remember, and it's frustrating. Fortunately, I have visual memory. I can't remember names very well, but I'm great with fabrics, shapes, and color. And this article was as told to Harriet Cole. Fashion designer Donna Cowron, 76, continues to design and sell clothing under her luxury lifestyle brand, Urban Zen, which also promotes wellness and extends a philanthropic hand to many in need. Now, in the same magazine, under the heading of Money Saver, the 10 Commandments of Late Life Divorce. When your marriage is put asunder, keep your finances whole. And this is by Diane Harris. If Adam and Eve had decided to split up after decades of acrimony over the apple, dividing their meager property wouldn't take Solomonic wisdom. But given the tangle of income and assets that older couples typically have today, ending a marriage later in life can have a financial impact of biblical proportions. One study found that wives who divorce after age 50 see a 45% decline in average in their standard of living. Husbands see a 21% drop. avoid a plague of problems by heeding these 10 commandments. 1. Thou shalt not covet a bygone lifestyle. When going through the upheaval of divorce, you may want to keep other aspects of your life the same. But that's unrealistic because you will likely only have half the financial resources. You might have to downsize, maybe cut back on your lifestyle, says Chris Chen, a certified divorce financial analyst in Newton, Massachusetts. But in most cases, you can, in fact, plan so you will not run out of money in your lifetime. 2. Thou shalt not worship thy home. In many divorces, one spouse prefers to stay in the family home and will give up some retirement assets to buy out the ex. That's usually a mistake, advisors say, given how expensive a house is to maintain. Plus, it's a highly illiquid asset that can leave you cash poor. If a home is going to be more than 70% of your net worth, you should consider whether you can really afford it, says Nancy Hetrick, a certified divorce financial analyst in Phoenix. 3. Thou shalt heed thy state's rules of division. Where you live largely determines how assets you and your spouse acquired during your marriage will be split. Assets you owned before you wed, and possibly gifts or inheritance you received while married, are considered separate property and won't be part of the settlement. In the country's 9 community property states, marital assets are divided evenly. Everywhere else, state guidelines call for an equitable distribution. Equitable doesn't necessarily mean 50-50 and doesn't always feel fair to the parties involved, says Julianne Incardona, a certified divorce financial analyst in Williamsville, New York. You can negotiate dividing specific assets as long as the overall value of the distribution meets state guidelines, or you agree to a different split. 4. Thou shalt share the fruits of thy labor. Along with the house, workplace retirement plans are typically a couple's most valuable holding. And like the home, they tend to elicit strong emotions, particularly from the spouse whose name is on the account. By law, though, both spouses are entitled to a share of retirement assets earned during the marriage, based on state guidelines and, in the case of pensions, each plan's rules. Adding to the complexity of pensions, whether the plan includes additional benefits such as health insurance and whether the account holder is already receiving payments. The couple usually has the option to divide benefits, put a lump sum current value on the pension and split that, or have the account holder buy out the ex. To execute the division, you typically need a special document called a Qualified Domestic Relations Order, QDRO, issued by a court or state agency. Government and military pensions have different mechanisms for splitting. 5. Know thou that not all assets are created equal. In negotiating, be mindful of how taxes can affect the value of different assets to make sure one spouse isn't shortchanged. For example, a savings account with a $100,000 balance is worth more than a traditional IRA with $100,000 in it because withdrawals from the retirement account, unlike withdrawals from the bank account, are taxable. Each spouse should talk to a financial advisor who didn't work with them as a couple, as well as a tax professional, to assess tax impact before any decisions are finalized, says attorney David Horowitz, co-chair of the Mediation Committee of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. 6. Thou shalt not count on thy ex's financial help. Expecting to get or pay spousal support for many years to come? Think again. Lifelong alimony has gone the way of the dinosaur, Hetrick says. In fact, once the spouse with higher lifetime earnings has reached full retirement age, There is usually no obligation to pay any alimony at all. Divorce won't affect your Social Security benefits in most cases. The higher earner's payments will continue as usual. If the lower earner has been collecting based on the spouse's work record, those payments will continue as well, as long as the couple were married for at least 10 years. If the higher earner dies first, the lower earner will then be entitled to 100% of the ex's benefit, even if the now deceased ex had remarried. Number 7. Honor and protect thy children. Want to ensure that your adult children get a fair inheritance? Hetrick recommends that each spouse, within 30 days of the divorce settlement, form a trust that leaves to their children the marital assets each has upon their divorce. Otherwise, if either of you remarries and then passes away, the new spouse, and eventually maybe the spouse's kids, will get everything, she says. Number 8. Thou shalt not covet thy ex's prized possessions. Dividing personal property, who gets the furniture, jewelry, artwork, photo albums, or the family pet, is a common point of contention. When couples fight about their stuff, they're fighting more about the memories attached to the stuff than about its market value, says Laura Bellow, president of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. Can't come to an agreement? A judge will decide for you, typically by either ordering you to sell the property in dispute and split the proceeds, or take turns choosing items, tossing a coin to see who picks first. Number 9. Thou shalt not act out of animus. Squash the urge to punish your ex. Aim for an amicable settlement. Contentious divorces often end up in litigation, which can cost up to 10 times as much as mediation. Mediation also gives you a better chance of successfully negotiating matters as you see fit, rather than accepting what the court dictates. You should be driving the decision, not the person in the black robe, Horowitz says. And finally, 10. Thou shalt move forward. Once the ink on your divorce decree is dry, make sure to change the beneficiary designated on your financial accounts and insurance policies so your ex doesn't inadvertently inherit your assets if you die. As you start to rebuild your life post-divorce, try to focus less on what you've lost and more on what you've gained. For example, greater autonomy on how to spend your money, says Erica Wasserman, a certified financial therapist in Miami. The freedom in that can be deeply satisfying. Now I'm going over to AARP, the Bulletin, for an article under Your Health. Wear your health on your sleeve. You can track your heart rate, sleep, even glucose levels just by strapping on a device. Are these next-generation wearables right for you? This is by Jean Doran McDowell. Wearable health monitors have come a long way since Fitbits and Apple Watches introduced the idea of digitally counting steps and calories burned. Today's wearables include a dizzying array of devices: armbands, smart rings, smart eyeglasses, chest strap monitors, clothing embedded with sensors to track physical activity, heart rate, blood pressure, temperature, blood oxygen, glucose levels, stress, sleep patterns, and movement. And while it can be fun to track your biometrics on your own, wearables are having a big impact on doctor-patient relationships by giving healthcare providers real-time access to critical health data. Some can record and transmit electrocardiogram, ECG readings. Others can detect falls and epileptic seizures before they happen. I ask my patients to self-monitor to tell me what their heart rates are, says Niraj Varma, MD, a cardiac electrophysiologist and professor of medicine at the Cleveland Clinic, who routinely recommends wearable monitors for patients diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, AFib, a common heart disorder that can disrupt blood flow and lead to blood clots and an increased risk of stroke. nearly 1 in 3 Americans use a wearable device, such as a smartwatch or a band, to track their health and fitness, but not all remote monitors are created equal. Consumer-grade wearables, such as smartwatches and rings, which you can buy online or at a retail store, may be fairly accurate, but are not FDA approved, which means they have not met stringent regulatory requirements. Medical-grade wearables, such as most continuous glucose monitors, which measure sugar levels, usually require a doctor's prescription and are FDA approved. Health information is transmitted via an app or a receiver and can be shared remotely with a physician, so it can be interpreted and discussed with the patient. While the accuracy of consumer devices varies across brands and the metrics that are being measured, they are not considered as accurate as medical-grade wearables. But even if the accuracy falls short, one of the intrinsic values of consumer wearables is that they can signal that something is wrong. If you are tracking your activity and motion, as well as heart rate, and suddenly there's a change, not from yesterday to today, but a definite trend of something happening, the wearable can be an alert system that tells you something is going on, says Albert Titus, a professor of biomedical engineering at the University at Buffalo. Here's a rundown of widely used wearable tech devices and what doctors who work with them have to say. Smartwatches and fitness trackers, best for monitoring basic health metrics and exercise. If your idea of a fitness tracker dates back 15 years or so, you might want to see what the new models can do. Through a technique called, oh my goodness, photoplethysmography, I think that's right, which detects heart rate by measuring changes in the volume of blood flowing near the surface of the skin, sensors can measure heart rate and even stress levels. They can also flag an irregular heartbeat, says Erica Shore, associate professor in the School of Nursing at the University of Minnesota, and a member of the American Heart Association's Center for Healthy Technology and Innovation Digital Science Working Group. That said, watches and trackers are not a replacement for regular checkups. They can't diagnose a heart attack or other serious medical conditions. Then there's smart rings, best for monitoring sleep. Smart rings emit light at specific wavelengths into the skin, and then measure how much of that light is reflected back to the ring. Since blood absorbs more light than other tissue does, the ring can monitor the rhythmic ebbs and flows in blood volume to track your heart rate and sleep cycles. These devices typically connect to a phone app and may require a monthly subscription. Smart rings may compile heart rate data more accurately than smart watches and may produce more accurate measurements in people with darker skin tones than wristwatches worn devices do. Melanin, a dark pigment in the skin, can also absorb some of the light emitted by optical sensors and distort heart rate measurements. But there is less melanin in the inside of the fingers than on the wrist. While sleep monitoring is a selling point of these devices, not everyone is sold on the value of this function. It's challenging for many wearables to accurately assess deep and REM sleep, says Sherry Ma, MD, a sleep physician and adjunct lecturer with the Stanford Sleep Medicine Center. People can get fixated on their daily sleep outcomes and on perfecting those numbers. Instead, she recommends looking at your results in terms of trends rather than nightly performance. Next, we have smart glasses and smart clothing, best for serious fitness enthusiasts. Smart clothing refers to garments, usually shirts and leggings, with embedded sensors that monitor vital signs and track physical performance. Like other health wearables, smart clothing monitors heart rate, temperature, heart rhythm, and physical movements. The data is transmitted via Bluetooth to an app in real time. Some smart clothes send alerts when the wearer experiences an irregularity or a health problem. Even eyeglasses can come with health trackers nowadays. Smart eyewear is equipped with sensors and Bluetooth connectivity embedded in the frames, and some can monitor heart rate and calories burned. But like wrist-based monitors, they're not as accurate as some other products. Chest strap heart monitors, best for serious athletes and people with heart conditions. While the heart rate monitor in your smartwatch or ring can provide useful data about your general fitness and exercise levels, a wearable that wraps around your chest to measure heart rate is considered the gold standard. Chest strap monitors use electrocardiography to measure electrical signals from the heart, which makes them more precise than the sensors used in wrist or finger-based devices. In April, researchers at the University of Missouri College of Engineering announced the development of a starfish-shaped wearable powered by AI technology that can detect heart problems with 90% accuracy. Some of these devices connect with a cable or wirelessly to a device that you can attach to your clothing or carry in a pocket. While many newer models use wireless connections to send data to your phone or another device. If you have a heart condition, your doctor might prescribe a medical-grade heart monitor that records the heart's rhythm, such as a Holter, which your physician reviews after you return the device. These monitors are even more accurate than the retail versions. Then there's a continuous glucose monitor. Best for people with diabetes or pre-diabetes, biohackers. Continuous glucose monitors, GCMs, which are worn as a patch and use a sensor that's inserted under the skin with a needle, continuously record glucose levels, sending an alert when they rise or fall too far. People who benefit most from CGMs are those with diabetes who require insulin therapy, because these monitors have been associated with reducing the risk of severe hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, one of the most feared complications of insulin use, says Aofi M. Egan, an endocrinologist at the Mayo Clinic. The American Diabetes Association advocates for CGM accessibility for people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes who are required to take insulin. But CGMs have also become popular with people who just want to know more about the impact of food, stress, and activity on their glucose levels. The emergence of several kinds of non-prescription CGMs have powered the biohacking curious to measure the sugar in their bloodstream, although over-the-counter CGMs give less detailed feedback than prescription models. An effective glucose monitor needs to pierce the skin, researchers say. Last year, the FDA alerted consumers that using smartwatches or smart rings that claim to measure blood glucose levels without piercing the skin can lead to errors in diabetes management. And there's a sidebar article here, is wearable monitor right for you? Wearables continue to evolve. Scientists are working on a smart ring that can help detect hand tremors, a Parkinson's disease symptom. Wearables that will be able to detect neurodegenerative diseases like multiple sclerosis and ALS in the early stages. And even a wrist-worn device that tracks activity patterns, which may catch early signs of Alzheimer's disease. But while wearables have myriad benefits, some people find that continuous monitoring of their health creates anxiety. Fluctuations in heart rhythms or blood sugar levels are normal and often insignificant, but if your device sends up an alarm, it can provoke unneeded stress. Telling someone they're experiencing a heart arrhythmia, if they don't feel it, can create more anxiety, says Lindsay Rossman, assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Cardiology at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. Rosman says we need more studies, both on the adverse effects of wearables and on who would actually benefit from these devices. Now, back to AARP, the magazine. Let's look at three moves for stronger arms. As we get older, we may find that our arms aren't as strong as they used to be. But good news, you can build strength at any age. How? Science says to just squeeze. Here are your three-step plan, morning bicep boost. At a desk, place your palms underneath, facing up, bending elbows. Drop your shoulders and squeeze biceps while pushing against the bottom of the desk. Hold the contraction for 10 seconds. Afternoon, wall push. Stand and face a wall with hands at shoulder height. Lean in and press into the wall as hard as you can without moving. Hold for 15 seconds. 3. Evening towel twist. Sit up straight and hold a thick rolled towel at both ends with arms extended. Twist the towel ends in opposite directions as if wringing water out. Hold the position for up to 20 seconds. Repeat all three exercises 4 times. And a nostalgia point. June 30, 1955, CBS debuts a primetime show featuring an obscure comedy writer. The Johnny Carson Show is soon canceled without finding an audience, but its format is repurposed by the future Tonight Show host, who helps revolutionize America's late-night viewing habits. And back to the Bulletin and their cover story, Great 99 Great Ways to Save. We're up to number 6, and this is under grocery shopping. Always check your receipt. Review the sales slip before you leave the store. If you find an error, most often when an item on sale rings up at full price, you can get a refund fast. If you wait to check until you're home, you're less likely to follow up. Look high and low. Some grocery stores place the more expensive items at eye level, while the more economical brands in the same category may be on a higher or lower shelf. Don't be shy about asking for help to reach up so you can compare prices. You may be surprised at the savings. And try store brands. You can save 30 to 50% off the cost of name brands. Check the ingredients in the store brand's product against the ones in your favorite name brand. You may be able to return an item if not satisfied. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.